Foremost, thank you to Milt Newman for sponsoring today's Legal Holiday Learning Shiur.
Thanks, Milt.
Thank you, Milt. Milt is sponsoring in honor of Gil Stebbins' 2-year tenure coming to an end as president. Certainly one of the more unique tenures in Young Israel Oak Park's history as president. Lots of weighty decisions. And on a personal note, a big thank you to Gil and his, accommodating the new rabbi, being the first one to take on the new rabbi as a president, and surely was appreciated of the flexibility you gave me, and allowed me to do different things. So, welcome, come on in. I don't know if there is anything that you want over there, but we have source sheets over here by Gil, and we are talking about a very interesting character generally, and I wish I could know even more about him. But another interesting topic that he had to deal with. Now, we have actually mentioned this person before. I'm not sure. Our very first legal holiday learning, way back when, which David claims was Labor Day of 2019. I'm not sure if I started already Labor Day. It's possible that it was December. So you think I started in July, but I don't think I definitely didn't do July 1st. The question is when I started this year. So it's possible it was Labor Day of 2019. If you remember, we talked about a machlokas between a Rabbi Ash and Rabbi Judah Middleman. Those were their names in New York City. And they were discussing whether or not they could buy a church and turn it into a shul. That was our first discussion. So this person, he goes by Moshe Aronson. As we'll see in a second, that wasn't really his name. But he was part of that sort of New York City chevra of rabbis from Europe that were trying to figure things out in America. So if you look here, I just have this quick biography, a couple of things that I found online about him. Moshe Aronson, he was born in 1805. He was, here it says he calls him a preacher. In traditional Jewish terminology, we would call him a maggid. Back in Europe, there used to be a position called a maggid. Nowadays, for some reason, it's become a thing that Maggid is associated with Hasidus, but it really isn't. A Maggid used to be a person, a rabbi, who would go from town to town and give divrei chizuk. Like, you think of people, who just passed away, it was Harry Wallerstein, that type of person, that's all, right? He would go around and make drushas for people, to give them chizuk. A guest speaker, like a professional guest speaker. A Pesach Kron, exactly, that kind of thing. So that's what a Maggid used to be. So he was sort of a maggid back in Europe, and he was somewhat of a maggid in America too. So you see here, Moshe Aronson, the son of Aaron. Now that kind of name, we know that kind of name from way back when. Back in Spain, they used to take names like that, like Nachmanides and Maimonides, right? Those are names because their parents were called Maimon, or their parent was called Nachman. So here, he actually does this, he uses the same trick. He uses the same traditional trick of what to make your last name based on your father. He uses it, but in the 19th century. He was born in Salant, Lithuania, so much so that, although I don't think I have it here, there are some references to him as Rav Moshe Salanter. There was a Rav Moshe Salanter, I believe one of the descendants of Rav Yisrael Salanter, but not the same person. Definitely not the same person. I feel like he was in Yerushalayim. Anyone know? Moshe Salanter? Maybe that was Rav Shmuel Salanter. I can't remember. Either way. So he was born in Lithuania around 1805 and served as a maggid in several Eastern European cities, including Vyshtinets, Brutsky, and Mir. I recognize one out of three. Little is known about Aronson's early years, but his scholarship became evident as early as 1836. Right? So he's 31 years old when he authored a book of sermons entitled Pardes HaChachma. Right? A maggid, his whole career is to make drushes. In 1836, he comes out with his book, and I believe you can find it online. I know you can find the next one. Several years later, he published Pardes Habina. That one we definitely have, a work of sermons and responsa. This is not what we're going to quote from. He makes another book later on. When he immigrated to America in 1860, Aronson became a maggid in New York City. For a while, he conducted a minyan at his home on East Broadway and was referred to by some of his followers as the East Broadway Maggid. There's a real good American title, East Broadway Maggid. Yeah. When I gave a Jewish history class in Kansas, so some of these, You know, they didn't know much, so whatever they knew was because I taught it to them. And I would teach them about Hasidic rabbis, and I would tell them, oh, he was called this rabbi because he was from this place, and that rabbi because of that place. What? Well, it runs on a diagonal, so I don't know if that's why, but I don't know. You are right. It generally runs north and south, but it is a diagonal. Anyway, so one of them started calling me the Maryland Rebbe because I'm from Maryland. So he came up with that. So he was the East Maryland, East Broadway Maggid. During most of his years in New York, Aronson served as a preacher at several synagogues, including Chevrat Visioner. I assume that's because of vision. And then ultimately on East Broadway and Allen Street Beth Hamidrash. There's an Allen Street synagogue, I think, until today. There's an Allen Street shul in Lower Manhattan, I believe. I think I did a report on it once. Either I did a report or I visited it once. It's like squeezed into all these other apartment buildings. It just blends in basically. But inside it has the architecture of a classical European or a classic I shouldn't say European a classical American shul, early 20th century type of shul where you have like the balcony on the top and like basically there's a big hole in the middle. And that would be the where you peek into as the woman would look down into the sanctuary. I don't know if people have seen this type of shul, but it's a very small version of that. Like the bottom, this Allen Street shul, I don't think this is the same thing. I didn't look into it enough. But this shul, Allen Street shul, it maybe fit 25 men. So it was like a very cute, like miniature version of that big motif. We did the right. I studied architecture at NYU. That's where it comes from. A congregation that is separated from the Beth Hamidrash HaGadol, not Lakewood. In 1864, Aronson was appointed rabbi of congregation Adat Yeshurun in New York. I don't know if that is connected to older ones to the other ones that we know about, but either way, he was a contentious individual who engaged in personal and religious squabbles with other local clergy. You can imagine in the 1860s coming to America as a rabbi. You're literally laying the groundwork for a brand new country. And besides the fact that you're dealing with rabbis coming from different places in Europe who have different minhagim and different ways of doing things, besides the minhag issue, you have people in America who don't know heads from tails in Judaism, and you're trying to give guidance about things that are very tenuous. How are we going to keep this community building in a way of Torah and mitzvot when nobody wants to keep Torah mitzvot, right? So it's a very challenging situation. I do not envy that position, but you can imagine, some similar situations go on here in smaller communities in America still. Either way, Aronson became a formidable rival of two of New York's most distinguished Talmud scholars, Avram Yosef Ash, who we talked about that first year, and Judah Middleman, who we talked about in that first year. He opposed the text of Avram Ash's Get, calling into question the divorces he administered. That is not easy territory. That is very, very difficult territory to get into. And he accused Judah Middleman of improperly permitting the bloodletting of animals prior to their slaughter. This, I actually think, if I'm daring enough or courageous enough, we might do in a future shir, the machlokas between Rabbi Middleman and Rabbi Aronson about shechita. It used to be, and I looked into it a little bit, that they didn't have enough of a commercial, foothold in America to have their own cattle and to have their own schlachthaus, whatever. There weren't enough people to make it worthwhile, so they would bring in cattle from Europe. They would bring them over on ships, and because of the journey or whatever, they would be almost like saturated with a swelling because of the warmth of the ship or whatever, and they would have so much blood in them. That's what they said, at least. That they would bloodlet them when they came onto American shores, and there was a question whether or not that was a mum, whether it created a mum when you would release the blood out of them, causing doubts about the kashas of meat supervised by middlemen. Generally, by the way, I think we were makil about that. He was machmir. This individual, Rabbi Aronson, was machmir about it. But their tshuvas, I think the Chassam Sofer already wrote a tshuva about it, that it was okay. In 1873, tensions generated by disagreement between Aronson and other New York rabbis regarding the kashrus of California wine forced him to leave New York after being excommunicated by rabbis Ash and Middleman. They had, rabbis of conviction in early America. Traveling through several American cities as an itinerant preacher, Aronson family settled in Chicago, where he died on August 25th, 1875. There is an alternative account, which is that he was actually trying to get to Eretz Yisrael. I don't know why, but he was going through Chicago to get there, and he just died while he was there. A big airport, yeah, right. Yeah, he was trying to go through O'Hare to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Either way, so here's an interesting little snippet. Maybe it was going through Midway, which didn't even exist, right? It was named after the war, which didn't happen yet. Here's an interesting snippet that I also found online. Congregation Beth HaMidrash. On Sunday next, October 6th, services of a very interesting nature will take place. Nowadays, that would mean a very different thing. But a very interesting nature will take place at the synagogue of this congregation, 78 Allen Street, the new chief rabbi. I don't know what that means. I really don't know what that chief rabbi moniker is. Presumably of the shul, but it can't be that big of a shul. So what do you mean? Chief of what exactly? Right. I don't know if it's the same shul as I said before. But new chief rabbi, Rabbi Moshe Aaron. Moshe Aaron, who's that? It's the same guy. Moshe Aaron will deliver his inaugural address. We call attention to the advertisement in another column by which it will be seen that the officers and members of the various city congregations are invited to be present, which is a convoluted way of saying everyone come, you know. So that's a big deal. A new rabbi in New York City, you know, how many are there? Five? You know, it's not like you come over, you know, it's not like an Orthodox rabbi comes over from Europe every day. So this is a little bit behind Rabbi Moshe Aaronson. And his actual name, and in his tshuvas, he actually calls himself Rabbi Yosef Moshe Ben Aaron. So his name was Yosef Moshe Aaronson. I believe he had a different last name before, but I can't remember what it was. When he was in Europe, he had a last name. But it was too complicated when he came over into America, so he changed it to Aaronson, or Aaron. So here, this is the character. So first of all, what you find already from his sort of biography is that first, he's a trailblazer, and he's not afraid of taking his own stance, right? And that's going to be important in terms of what we'll find in his response to the tshuva. He's not afraid of making his own judgment on a call, even if it's not based on previous tradition. So here's the tshuva. Here's at least the question. Tshuva Shvi'it. This is in a book called Mat'e Moshe, named after him, obviously. But Mat'e Moshe is actually, I saw in one place, let me see if I have it here. Yeah, this is by a Eisenstadt, I forgot, early American Jewish historian in the early 20th century. So he says here about Rabbi Aaronson, to Rabbi Joseph Moses Aaronson of New York is due the distinction as the author of the first book of America Responsa, the first ever tshuvas from America, this book that we're about to read from. The first published, but entirely American tshuvas. Now, you might think, like, wait, Rabbi, I thought you said it was hard to find these tshuvas. It is hard to find these tshuvas. Most of the tshuvas are just regular tshuvas that happen to be in America, right? It's not like there's anything specific about settling America or whatever. I try to find the ones that are particular to, you know, early American issues. Yeah. First published book of response. 300 years. We're talking about 1860s. Okay, but there were not Orthodox communities like this. And if there was an issue that they had to ask a shayla, they would ask Europe. They wouldn't, and then even if they did ask somebody on local ground, they wouldn't publish a whole sefer of tshuvas. So this is the first, purportedly, the first book of tshuvas. For sure. And we've quoted from earlier than this, for sure. Yeah, they never compiled the book or whatever. But that's a landmark. That's sort of a landmark, accomplishment that you could have an entire book of tshuvas just in America. That's a level. That's a step in progress. It's due to the distinction of the author of the first book of American response to the questions sent to him from various congregations in the United States. I actually found an interesting tshuva about a woman in Kalamazoo. It has nothing to do with settling Kalamazoo, so it's not really that interesting. It has to do with whether or not she was allowed to marry a husband before the 3 months was up. You know, people learning Yevamos, you know that. because her husband was, I don't know, it seems like abusive, and he ran away, and the question was, could she marry earlier? Because she needed the money, and whatever. There was this nice guy in Kalamazoo that she wanted to marry. Okay, I don't know. I'm going to look into different things, see if I can find some more interesting stuff. But so this is his tshuva. His book of tshuva is called Mate Moshe. And as you can imagine, the print is difficult to read, so bear with me a little bit, and I'll try to guide you through it. This, as we colloquially refer to it as Rashi script, which has nothing to do with Rashi, but that's just how they used to print Rashi in Chumashim. So here you can find in Tshuva Shvi'it, in the seventh Tshuva in the Mate Moshe.
Nothing to do with
Shemitah. Nothing to do with Shemitah, no. Hein Nish'alti, I have been asked, Me'ish Chacham Mufla, from a very, wise man. Okay, Mufla, Morenu Harav Shimon Nat, Nun Alef Tes. In our way of pronouncing, we would probably pronounce that nut. I've seen this referenced as Newt, Rabbi Simon Newt. I don't know why you would say that if that's how it's spelled, but okay. Im yesh heter lahamid knesia midasa. Sorry, lahamid knesia chadeta. I first thought that was midasa, and it doesn't make any sense. But knesia is a shul, chadeta is new. It's Aramaic for new. Why are they using Aramaic while they're living in America? I don't know. But Knesia Chadata, they're trying to build a new shul. Sheispalu Bitocha, that they want to daven within it. Letzad Ruach Ma'aravit Dromit. They want to daven within this new shul in New York City. They want to daven in it in the southwest direction. What's southwest direction in New York City facing? California? It's southwest. They're coming to him and saying, Rabbi, can we daven to the southwest? What do you think? I mean, look at this map over here. Here's a map, regular map, that you would find any place. This is, I just drew a line, from New York City to Eretz Yisrael. That is, if anything, it's southeast. And they want to say south, more east than south, obviously. But you can tell it's going down a little bit. So it seems like they're establishing, it seems like at the very least they're establishing a new congregation or a new meeting place. I'm not sure if the building was built, but it could very well be, and I've seen this asked in other places, it could very well be that the shul was more accommodating for it to be positioned that way. So it's unclear, we don't know much of the context of what the building looked like, or what probably the room looked like. I doubt they were building a whole building in 1863. But nonetheless, they're asking this question. And it's kind of like a, what are you talking about? Get out of here question. Like, southwest, of course not. Right? If I were to ask you, can we daven that way? You'd say, what are you talking about, Rabbi? Where'd you get your smicha? What? When you were in Eilat. Well, so we're going to get into, we'll sort of get into this. In Eretz Yisrael, this is a very relevant question because depending on where you go in the roundabouts of Yerushalayim, so you're going to be, facing a different direction every single time. I remember one day I was taking a tour of Yerushalayim and we davened in a different direction every single davening. Shachas, Mincha, and Maariv. We davened three different directions. It's just, fun. I think we even stopped specifically so that we can daven in a different direction. we could have easily gotten back to the yeshiva and davened regularly, whatever. But they wanted us to see Mekai in three different directions in one day. Either way. So this is the kasha. If this shiloh would come to you, you'd say, what are you talking about? Get out of here. But when it comes to, and that's because we have a halacha. The halacha is in the Shulchan Aruch. It's pretty clear. You can find it at the top of the second, the back page here. This is in Aruch Chaim Simen Sadi Dalet, 94. Bikumo lihispalel, when you get up to daven, imhay omen b'chutz la'aret, yachzer panav k'nevek d'Eretz Yisrael. And when you're davening outside of Eretz Yisrael, face Eretz Yisrael, and to be more and more specific, you should specifically, and sometimes in Yerushalayim you can make this type of you can have this type of specificity that you daven directly to Yerushalayim to the Beis HaMikdash, and even at the Kotel, this happens to be a machlokas. So I'm not telling you whether or not you should or shouldn't do this. Happens to be a machlokas that when you're at the Kotel, should you turn? People have probably seen this. Should you turn a little bit to the left because that's where purportedly the Kodesh HaKadoshim was. So first of all, the Kodesh Gedashim, it's machlokas, that's first of all. I have to give all these disclaimers. And second of all, maybe there's a lack of Kedusha now, although we don't necessarily say that if that is the real spot. But generally, also you have a separate problem of davening in a different direction than other people are davening. And then there's the question of whether or not tilting it a little bit this way is actually a divergence from the person is going this way. Is that that big of a difference that it's actually a problem? But generally, if you're in a shul and that shul is davening in the wrong direction or what you believe to be the wrong direction, you should still daven the way that everybody else is davening. That also is a somewhat of a machlokas. It depends how much you're diverging. So for instance, almost every shul in New York City has this problem. Anyone know why? Why is every shul in New York City has this problem? Clearly not New Yorkers here.
They're not
Adina? Exactly. What do you mean?
Even what they call North is not really.
The island of Manhattan is actually on an angle. The island of Manhattan actually runs at an angle, you know, southeast to northeast, southwest to northwest, to northeast.
Southeast to northwest.
To your way, it'll be this way. So every single shul that's built on the grid, every single shul that's built on the grid, if you align it with the streets, so then you're going to be facing at an angle, right? So that's why if you go to YU's old base measures, this is one of these quirky YU things. If you go to the new base medrash, it's built on a grid and you just face forward. If you go to the old base medrash, it's also built on the grid, but they face the corner. I don't know why. It's like a weird thing that in one of the batei medrash in YU, they face at an angle, and in one of them they face straight away, even though it makes no sense at all. Either one or the other. But either way. It is the correct angle. It is the correct angle. But part of the reason why in the old base medrash that they changed it was because that room that they davened in was built during the Great Depression, and they were expecting to build a new base medrash, which presumably would have been in the right direction, but they had to stop building it, and therefore they started davening in what they were going to make the lunchroom, the chadar ochel, the cafeteria, and then they just said, okay, well, how do we make this into a shul? I guess we're going to have to daven at an angle. And then since then, they daven at an angle in that room. Kind of interesting. What do you mean the direction changes? You find out a different direction?
No, I know. Like a plane or...
Oh. I've never thought about that. Well, yeah, that would be weird. That would be weird. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, right. If you're diving in a helicopter that's taking you around Yerushalayim. yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, plane is an interesting question. Typically, a plane is always going in one direction. But sometimes the closer you get, it depends. So that's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I've never heard that Shiloh, but it's interesting to think about. And anyways, the Mishnah Berurah goes through some of the sources for this, and he also goes through this. Rabbi Aronson also goes through it, and maybe I'll quote a little bit of it. This is not the whole tshuva. This is just sort of the beginning and the end of the tshuva here. But I have the whole tshuva here. It's about six of these columns, five of these columns. But let's start from the beginning. Good place to start. Uvakashas haTalmid, Uvakashas haChacham haShoel Hera lanu panim bezeh sheyesh bo tzarach mitzvas Talmud Torah. It's an interesting way of saying it. Maybe you would think that this is a simple question, but he came here and he showed me that there is some necessity to learn a little bit, right? As he says, yesh bo tzarach mitzvas Talmud Torah. There is a necessity to be mekayim the mitzvah of learning. Meaning, we got to look into this a little bit. Why? Vigam ish maven, and then he brought an expert with him. Right? So you got this chacham who's bringing some kind of expert. What kind of expert? Hera li. Anyone know what the next word is? Okay. He's not being sarcastic here. Hakador, meaning a globe. He brought a globe. Vahamapa and a map. She America. That's what that word is. Hu bechati hakador hashenit mul tzafon Eretz Yisrael. If you were to look at a map, so you'll see that that America is on the northern hemisphere. I'm not sure if that's what he means when he says chator hakador hashenit, or he means the other side of the world, depending on how you're looking at the globe. But either way, it is to the north of Eretz Yisrael, right? If you were to look at a map in the first page, as you saw, it's to the north. And in a literal sense, if you look at the coordinates here, I just put them here for you. This was not in his tshuva. New York is at 40 degrees north and 74 degrees west, right? The west of the prime meridian line, which runs sort of in between through Greenwich, for those who care. I mean, it's in between. I don't know. It's not equidistant between, because we'll see. It's closer to Europe than it is to America. But 74 degrees west, and Yerushalayim is 31 degrees north. So you can see that there's a 9-degree difference to the north. America is 9 degrees to the north of Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim is obviously 35 degrees east. So we'll see how he says it here. So he says, "V'chatzei Hagdol Hasheni Mul Tzafon Eretz Yisrael." Meshucha mikneged Eretz Yisrael, right? So it is. He uses the word meshucha, which is an interesting word, which means like pulled or it's extended from what? Displaced, maybe. Okay, displaced or extended from meshucha mikneged Eretz Yisrael. Ach lo b'miktoa ma'aravit hi shochenet. Kimidinot Europa. I don't know if this is a typo. It says kimidionet. Europa. I don't know if that means the continent of Europe or it's meaning the countries of Europe. I'm not sure. Either way, it's not. His point is, I think it's not exactly west. Arach v'shel tzad mizrachit yesh erech mea v'ester malot al Yerushalayim. So already in 1863, they knew these degrees, right? They knew how to calculate it. So if you see here, it's right. New York is to the west of the meridian 74. And Yerushalayim is to the east, 35. You put those together, it's about 110. So he already knows that, right? It's Erech Mea Ve'eser Ma'alot Ad Yerushalayim. U'lesad Ma'aravid, I find this a little bit humorous. U'lesad Ma'aravid Yesh Yeter Al Matay Ma'alos. And to the other direction, it's more than 200. Well, how much is it?
240.
It's a pretty easy calculation. It's 250. Because the world is 360. So if one is 110, the other one is 250. But for whatever reason, he didn't feel like doing math that day. So he just said, it's more than 200. Lefi ha-hekef ha-kador, right? On the globe. Aval im nucha lahamshich chevel hamida. If you were able to extend chevel hamida, I think it's like a measuring stick or a measuring rope. Chevel is a rope. Chevel hamida mapah nochach Yerushalayim. Kmo kein namod nochach Yerushalayim. And similarly, from Yerushalayim or going to Yerushalayim or from Yerushalayim, I think he's saying, "Hein im nefem lemizrach, im lemarav." Whether you go east or west, v'zenoda lefiya malot, and that's known based on the degrees. You can see how much you have to go. Lefi cheshbon godel hayamim v'halelot, and you can tell based on how long it would take you to get there from days and nights. Lefi she'eineni yachol lihitkader b'chachmazu, and because I'm not able to figure this out, I'm not an expert in this matter. I wanted to not say anything. This is what Rabbi Aronson is appropriately saying. You have to have a little humility when it comes to a shaila you're not familiar with. I didn't want to say anything. Right? I wanted to just rely on other people who know it. The gamchas lihimatzei tzvaros v'deros mizuyafos asher lo sharim avosenu, and furthermore, I'm worried that maybe I'm going to come out with some kind of logic which is a forgery, because these measurements were not taken from Chazal, right? The rabbis never took measurements from America, and therefore, who am I to say that this is the correct measurement? Ach, and this is always the big but. Because he's asking me, so I'll give him an answer. You're right. I didn't want to answer, but he's asking me. I don't know what this word is. Maybe that I don't want to look into it, but I love the Torah. So I'll do my best, something like that. So that is the end of the first paragraph of this tshuva. So what you've seen is an interesting first line there, and I've read this over a bunch of times. I still don't know what he means when he says that one way is 110, the other way is over 200. But if you would take a string and you would extend it, it would go in both directions. You could do it. Yes, exactly. When you get to the end of the tshuva, and then the tshuva goes on to say basically go through the sources of why you have to face the right direction, and why it is not only do you have to face a generally right direction, but even a specific right direction. The Gemara says, and maybe one day for Shabbos afternoon we'll do this, I don't know how it connects to a parsha, but maybe one day we'll do this, that the halacha is you're not supposed to face exactly east. Anyone know that halacha? You're not supposed to face exactly east because that's where the sun comes up. What was that? Well, okay, that, you're talking about specificity. I'm talking about the Gemara is talking about not doing east. Why? Because at least according to Rashi on that Gemara, it says that Rashi tells us that that's how the Christians would daven, straight to the sun. Right? And the sun comes up, you daven to the sun. And we don't want to look like we're heretics, so you don't daven straight east. Okay? When you're so far away, it doesn't really make a difference. But I have no idea what he's talking about. I don't know what Rashi's talking about. I don't know what Rabbi Aronson's talking about. So yes, I don't know. But there's a lot of complication that goes into where the sun is exactly east. When does that actually happen? Yeah. But either way, so he goes through the whole rigmarole about all the Gemaras about, you know, and took him. And he comes to the point that this is actually could possibly be a mitzvah d'oraisa or a element of fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraisa of davening, according to the Rambam, would be exactly to do it in the right direction. Otherwise, you would not fulfill it. That's how he makes that claim. But we're not going to get into that claim. In the end of the tshuva, or I guess the second half of the tshuva, so he says the following phrase. The words right before this are, you know, I have to see if it's true. Shehara li ha-chacham ke-ha-chacham ha-shoel im od mufla echad. I have to figure out whether it's true what this chacham said, along with this expert. Shelefi ha-malos kmo ke nagia, just according to the degrees. Just like kmo kein nagia mehachnasas halaz achari shalaim l'tzad marav kmo l'tzad mizrach. I read this over a bunch of times. I don't know if he's trying to say that it's the same degrees or not. It doesn't make any sense that he would say that. And I looked up old maps to see if there's like a manipulation of the lands, you know, proportions. In 1850s, they should have had a map like we have today. So I'm not sure if he's being given a wrong map and now he's making the claim that the degrees are the same, or he's just saying that directionally you could go in either direction. Because he says lefi hamalos kmoche nagia. That doesn't make any sense. According to the degrees, you'll get there. I don't know what according to degrees means. You don't need degrees if you're going to get there in either direction. So I don't know what he means lefi hamalos kmoche nagia meachnasas halaz. Just like you get there the east way, you can get there the west way. Good, that's what he's... Right. And that's what he's saying in the next part. That's what it sounds like he's saying in the next part. V'af shehamalo shiaserin l'tzad marav milatzad mizrach, even though the degrees are more to the west than they are to the east. Humi pas riboy ha-hekav v'hakador. That's just because there's more space on that side of the globe. I don't know what that means. Right, that's only based on how long it takes to go around the globe. Aval, and this is where I'm getting confused. Aval, however, maybe you can help me with understanding. Im haya biyecholto lahashlich chevel hamida, if it was possible to take a string, right, a measuring string, ulahamshicha biyosher al pnei hamayim, and to extend it straight across the water, vahamidbar, and across the desert, it will get to Yerushalayim. I don't know what the aval is. He just said that if you go in either direction, you'll get to Yerushalayim. So I don't know what the aval is. The aval, it sounds like he's saying the same thing. My original impression of the word aval was that you could, in a theoretical sense, get to somehow a similar measurement. And I have no idea how that's possible. But my first thought, you know, if I were to try to get into the mind of someone who doesn't know anything about this, my first thought was maybe he's talking about taking a string and going through the ocean, as opposed to going on the face of the ocean. He goes through the ocean on the land, but he doesn't say anything like that, so I can't. If you just take the word aval out, the word aval doesn't make any sense here. Aval, im hayi bechotu ha'ashl cheva hamida, you'd get there, leis din sarach voshesh, which is a phrase from the Gemara that basically means that you know nothing to worry about. Ki mutar lahamid habinyan kazeh ulhispalel l'tzad ma'aravis dramis. Bilti shum chashash u'tikuk. There's no problem facing the west. There's no problem facing southwest. This guy came in and said, hey, Rabbi, can we face southwest? And he says, yeah, I don't see why not. If you look at the globe, you go this way, you get there. You go this way, you get there. There's no problem going southwest. That's what that's his answer. No way. Okay. Straight east. So, it's a... Right. 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 It's interesting. Right. So if you continue the tshuva, and I don't have it on the sheet here, but he then says interesting little tidbits here about that kind of idea. He talks about how in Babylonia they must have switched a little bit to not just straight east, but a little bit to the south. And they had to face, the south of the world. It just has to be straight. According to the experts, it's got to be straight to Yerushalayim. This is not a Shasav Chak issue, says Rabbi Aaron. This is not a Shasav Chak. This is the halacha. If you're facing the direction of Yerushalayim, then you're good to go. He makes the point. He makes the Europe point also. He says in Europe they also must have done this. Different places in Europe were in different angles towards Yerushalayim. They must have. That's what he says. I'm not sure if it's true. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're gonna get there also. Well, I'm gonna get there. He's not gonna get there. London. They must turn a little bit to the south. No, I would think. For sure, that's it. Right. Right. Yeah. Right. It's not really exactly Yerushalayim. Even here, it's not exactly Yerushalayim. Yeah. And then he says an interesting phrase here, and I'm not sure why he says this, because presumably you could say this in every single tshuva. Aval im chas v'shalom milsa bedusahi. If this is chas v'shalom a joke. He's accusing the people that are bringing him as the Shaila, with the Shaila as, like, fooling him. V'im yamdu l'tzad ma'aravis dromis, and then you'd be facing southwest. He has so little confidence in his knowledge of the map that he's saying, maybe you're just tricking me, and maybe this is a fake map, and maybe this is a fake globe. I've never seen one of these things before. Right? That's what it sounds like. Im bedusi, if this is a big joke, you're pulling the wool over my eyes. And then you, right, he's basically threatening them, and then you dive into the southwest, lo yehe mechuvan k'neged Eretz Yisrael, az yodu ne'amanash lo yo'ilu lamo b'zeh al piyadah shel Torah, lo dachak lo paput dvarim hanilozim, ki einam al piyatorah v'sugyos ha-talmud. You should know that you're not following the halacha. U'rvusim kadmai basrai, you're not following the chazal and the achronim. V'yedu ki b'nach shamhu. And it's your own fault. But then he says, avachas v'shalom li lachshod b'ksherim. I should be suspicious of anybody. But you could do that in every single tshuva. You could always say that. Maybe you're lying to me. For some reason, he had a reason to put this in there. I don't know why. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he brought his own witness. Yeah. Right. The Oki Gavri Achaz Kasei, I'm going to just assume that they're good people. Uma Gamshu Noda Lechol Tovsei Mishpat Tovsei Mashut hachachma, mashut hachachma hi vavada, kamana tashol hi, l'shem shemayim. My impression is that they're doing it for the right reason. Umi yitain v'yitaisun lei v'chol mili jishmaya, l'avda v'chol levavam zu tzvilas mashikasav ha-chazal. Meaning they're doing it, and even as long as they're l'shem shemayim, as the Gemara says, afil mechitas barzal emam fikin ben yisrael avim shabash shemayim. It's not ma'akev, as long as you're doing l'shem shemayim, it should work. V'tizkushikam dor achron, banim yuladu yispalu al Hashem kederach avosenu. And the children should be born here in America that also similarly daven to Hashem in the way that their parents did, Hayisharim. I don't know what this means. No chay nefesh, I think. Kol chatarti bezras yosri legalos la'ame hadas. This is what I've concluded based on my analysis. To those who are religious, bezeh, la'ame hadas, azeh, avor kvar Hashem teresu le'avas ami, yom gimel chaf tes sivan taf resh chaf gimel, And then he says here, Poe, and he says the name of the city, which is New York. This is how he spells New York. Nun, Yud, Yud, Aleph, Resh, Yud, Kuf. New York. Nyarik. I don't know how he came up with that. It's possible there's a little bit of a problem with the print here. Maybe it's supposed to be a Vav at the end, but there's definitely a Resh, something, and a Kuf.
If you do it all, it's one word?
Yes, one word, which is not how he passes today. What? Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the shuvas. Some of the shuvas deal with how to spell New York City. He's obviously overruled. This is not how he spell New York City. What? No, he's not in Newark. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Facing southwest. Yeah, it depends how the room was built, for sure. Right, it has to be a little F. So this is. Right, right, right. Depends on the angle. Yeah, it depends on the angle. As we saw here, we're only 9 degrees. Seems credible. According to a flat map, we're only 9 degrees north of Yerushalayim. So to even move a little bit would be 9 degrees, just because of the distance that we are away. Yeah. I was on the south. Yeah. Right. When I was a kid, I used to speak. Oh, you do dive into the corner. Right. That's hard. Interesting. Well, he got up and did Shemoneh Esrei. You don't remember, okay. But, yeah. Right. So what's interesting about this is southwest is southwest, right? Southwest seems like it doesn't make any sense to us because if you look at the map, it's either west or, you know, east or west. So his position is that because Eretz Yisrael, if you look at a globe, so then you'll see that America is to the north of Eretz Yisrael, that if you would similarly go to the southwest, you'd also south, meaning you would include south in your positioning, so that would be justified. He doesn't give any proportions about how much you're turning to the south, but presumably you could miss it, right? If you're thinking about southwest on the map, right, on the front from the front page, if you think about the map and you turn southwest, you're definitely not going to hit Eretz Yisrael.
Well, it's going to be mostly west with a little bit of south.
Yeah, it's mostly west, a little bit of south. He doesn't say that, though.
Just like from here.
So what do you say? Okay, good. So it's possible that he's looking at a globe. Now, even in modern halacha, meaning before... What? I know, I actually looked for one. Even in modern halacha, when you look at the way that we daven to Eretz Yisrael now, there's a general question. I'll say it like this. The premise of his question or his answer is that the halacha is not the shortest route to Yerushalayim. That's the premise of his answer, is that it's not about the shortest, it's about being in the right direction. And you could be in this direction, you could be in that direction, right? You could always be in the right direction. Because if it was about the shortest, he would say you have to go east. Clearly he doesn't believe that. He thinks that you can go 250 degrees the other way and it's just as valid. If, however, the halacha was that it has to be the shortest, which some people do say it is, so then the question would be even more relevant today when we know about how a plane flies. If you were to go the way that this map says it would take you an extra 400 miles than if you would go to the northeast. And this is what I have here on the map on the bottom here. I know it's hard to find. This is Google Earth. This is actually, on the left, this is a map of America. I don't know if you can see the outline of the East Coast there. You can see a little bit of Texas on the bottom there. So this is that line that you see coming out to the north. That's stopping at New York City. Okay? You can see that I typed into the Google Earth, New York City to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem. And this is the line that it gave me. This is the line that the planes go. This is the quickest route to Eretz Yisrael from America. On a globe, and this has to do with how globes and balls and whatever, you know, the contours of the ball, if you were to go straight across, like in the way our maps are written, the way our maps are put on a flat surface, they're manipulated to the extent that would actually be longer, 400 miles longer in that direction. But the way the planes go is the quickest way, right over the water. And that's actually to the northeast. Now this, America, I think, is a little tilted here, so it's not a 45-degree angle like it looks like here. And this is the other side of it. you can see Israel a little better on this one. You can see, you know, Africa on the bottom left here, and then, you know, Europe on the top right. And then you can see this line going right into Eretz Yisrael. So that's the angle at which we come into Eretz Yisrael when we go on a plane. So ironically, I don't know if it's ironically, the shortest distance is actually northeast, and nobody faces northeast, right? Even if you were to be on a little angle, you wouldn't be at this angle, right? You wouldn't be at this angle, and even more so, if you were to look at a flat map, you're actually going southeast if you're trying to be exact, right? That's the map on the front page. You actually go 9 degrees south according to the coordinates of a map. But if you go on a globe, the shortest distance is actually northeast. So this is a shadow that real posts can talk about. In America, why do we face north? Why do we face east? We should be facing northeast. And generally, we just say that, you know, this is the Masorah, and you continue, you know, just facing east. But maybe one day we can get into the complicated nuances of that. But what I find interesting is that if the questioner came and said southwest, and basically exactly southwest, like a real 45-degree southwest, so then he would actually be more accurate than what we do. Because at least if you would take this in the other direction, right, if you would take this Google Earth image and go in the opposite way, right, the which would presumably be the longest way to get there to Israel, right? If that's the shortest way, I guess the opposite would be the longest way. I don't know if that's true or not. Is that true? I don't know. I don't know about how the contour is, you know, manipulated, because maybe if you would go straight west. Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to figure out if that's the perfect, if that's the shortest. I don't know. But the point is that is actually more accurate if you're going literally southwest and not just a little bit south. So I don't know what the questioner meant, and I don't know what he understood it to mean. He was worried about it because he'd never seen or never made did a Shiloh like this, you know, with a map and a globe, but he had no problem answering the Shiloh.
Familiar with the whole idea of a globe.
That could be. Yeah, it definitely could be. And I just want to read for you the end of this. This is, again, that historian's piece when he looks at this. So he says, and even his words, I don't know what he means. Rabbi Aronson, give me 1 second, Steve, I'll get back to you. Rabbi Aronson was shown a revolving globe on which Jerusalem was pointed out to be somewhat to the south of New York, which is how our maps show it, even though the globe shouldn't show that. I mean, I guess the globe could, depends how you look at it, I guess. I guess if you're still looking at the equator, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But if you're looking at the shortest distance, it wouldn't be true, but okay. A distance of 140 degrees more towards the east, which I think should be more towards the west. I don't know. Meaning it's 140 more degrees if you went westward than it would be to go eastward, right? Because east is 110, and then to the west was 250. So I don't know what he means when he says this. Accordingly, the worshippers in that synagogue would be turning toward the right direction of the holy city, but the rabbi nevertheless doubted the accuracy of the globe and rendered his decision subject to the verification of this geographical problem, of which he frankly admitted his ignorance. He didn't say it in exactly those words, but yes, he said that somebody else should, I would prefer if somebody else took the shiloh. Then the author of this book writes the following phrase. As a rule, the American rabbis were below the standard of learning in comparison with the rabbis abroad. The latter were even more liberal in making due allowances to suit the spirit of the time. I don't know where he gets this from, but the impression that I get from his interpretation is that these guys that were coming in were very religious, and Baruch Hashem, they were asking about which direction to daven, right? That kind of thing. So like, all right, I looked into the sources, and you guys can daven in the way that you want to daven, southwest. It sounds almost the way that he's presenting it is that, that technically you really shouldn't do this, but Baruch Hashem, they're davening in 1863 in New York City. That there are plenty of places in New York City that are not davening in an Orthodox rite, as you can imagine, you know, with conservative, what? Want me to read that? This passage, this most recent one? As a rule, the American rabbis were below the standard of learning in comparison with the rabbis abroad. The latter were even more liberal in making due allowances to suit the spirit of the time. What do you mean? I mean, the European rabbis. Right. Right, meaning when they came to America, they knew that there was a situation in America where people weren't very firm. The latter being the rabbis abroad were even more liberal in making allowances to the spirit of the time in America, I assume. You mean the spirit of the time in Europe was also a problem, you're saying? You're saying even in... Right.
And so,
right.
So all rabbis in America were European trained.
Right, for sure.
Maybe the rarest exception.
Right.
People wouldn't even call themselves rabbis.
Right. Well, we've seen some of those.
So I think it's talking about Europe.
Even Europe. Okay. It's possible you're talking about rabbis in Europe talking to people in Europe?
Yeah.
Okay. That could be. It could be that in the general, he's referring to... Oh, that could be. So I'll tell you what he then talks about as an example of this. He says, thus Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, of YU fame, but not from YU, thus Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector of Kavna Rasha gave marriage permits to seven widows whose husbands, among other passengers, perished January 19th, 1883, on the ill-fated Cimbria, on her voyage from Hamburg to New York, in spite of the heretofore ironclad rule of requiring evidence of identification of dead body, as the presumption was that the supposed drowning the men could have saved himself in the endless waters. Rabbi Spector established a precedent in view of the exceptional conditions of modern navigation and the various agencies of communication by accepting the captain's list of missing passengers as sufficient evidence. So I don't know how that connects to what he said before, but clearly Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector was being lenient for the spirit of the time. I don't know what that means. Again, unclear exactly what... Right, well...
You said there's a way of confirming that they are lost.
Right. Okay, I'm not sure that I would call that technology, but I wouldn't necessarily call it technology.
Not necessarily technology, but the point is that... They had a log of who was on the ship.
Right, with modern innovation.
Whereas prior to that, they may not have kept
right.
The log.
Right, just
aside
from the thing, they may not have kept the log. When the ship disappeared, you had no idea.
Right, you had no idea.
Right.
You had no
right.
Information. Now
yeah. So unclear if what he's talking about, this author is talking about, is general allowances or kulas for that generation, or specifically for America, but that is definitely the case, that when the rabbis came to America, they dealt with some sort of bidyevid situations, if you will, and trying to figure out, as we've seen, and trying to figure out how to navigate the American Jewish community, which was not necessarily as religious as they were in Europe, or at least some people were religious, at least the rabbis were religious in Europe. Surely there were non-frum Jews in Europe too, and that was a big issue there also, but there was no other frum community in America like there was in Europe. In Europe, you had from communities with from people keeping all halacha, and then you had some people that weren't. In America, you had nobody keeping, at least as a monolithic community, nobody keeping halacha strictly in this way. And therefore, you could say that maybe he was just trying to bring some kind of permissibility to this one congregation that wanted to daven to the southwest. In the end of the day, he was mekel on the shaila. Nowadays, I don't know any rav that would be mekel in this way. We generally assume that it is about the shortest direction, not just about the direction. So it is interesting to think about, you know, how exactly we should orient ourselves to Yerushalayim. Presumably, that sensitivity of facing Yerushalayim would involve getting there as quickly as possible, in which case it should be in the quickest direction too. He didn't understand it that way, and that's why he gave this leniency, at least for that generation, with his limited knowledge about maps and globes. So So that's an interesting shahat from 1863 of a shul in New York trying to find its direction. All right. Shkach again to Milk in honor of you.